Diabetes insights, breakthroughs, and innovators. The EASD TV podcast from the annual meeting of the European Association for the Study of Diabetes.
Hello again, EASD TV here, and we're talking guidelines. And in a very, very well-attended session today, we heard about guidelines relating to liver metabolic dysfunction associated steatotic liver disease. There's a brand new acronym in town, girls and boys, which you'll all have to learn, MASLD. And to tell us about it, we have a combination of a liver specialist, and that's Frank Tack from the Charité in Berlin. We have two diabetologists, and that is Hannele Ukijalvinen from Finland, from the University of Helsinki. Luckily, I'm getting not the evil eye about my pronunciation of Finnish, and Michael Roden from the University of Dusseldorf. So first of all, take us through this, Frank. Why was there a need for new guidelines? And I thought we used to talk about NASH.
Yes, thank you very much. I guess one of the needs that we felt is there is a new name to the disease that we previously knew as non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, and we now call it metabolic dysfunction associated steatotic liver disease. And with the name change, the new nomenclature, also the field has really tremendously evolved. So we recognize the relevance of cardiometabolic risk factors for disease progression in the liver with the liver perspective. We have a lot of new tests that tell us about the severity of liver disease. Previously, a lot was based on liver biopsies, so histological evaluation of the liver. Now we have new methods, for instance, transient elastography, new blood markers that tell us about disease severity. And we have new treatment options. We have a new drug approved in the US, soon to be approved in Europe, specifically for the indication of what's called now MASH, metabolic dysfunction associated steatohepatitis, previously NASH. And we have a lot of developments in the diabetes field, in the obesity field, with drugs that have some benefits for the liver as well. And most important for us GLP-1s, to engage with different disciplines and societies to bring all the knowledge together and really put out the latest evidence for the treatment of what we call now MASLD.
And remind us again why we don't talk about NASH any longer.
Well, there was a concern if you emphasize non-alcoholic that it would be perceived stigmatizing. Mm-hmm. And it does not allow to realize alcohol as a cofactor, because in social life, you may maybe drink small amounts of alcohol, which have an impact on cardiometabolic risk factors, but also on the liver disease. And the new nomenclature opens this opportunity to have also subgroups of individuals overlapping between different categories. We also avoid the name fat, because that is also stigmatizing, particularly in the English language. So now with the metabolic dysfunction, we put into the center what's wrong and what is the target also of our efforts of screening, diagnosis and treatment.
Now, Michael, this is part of an increasing trend at EASD to involve other disciplines in the development of guidelines. And of course, you know, diabetes affects all sorts of other organ systems. Tell me about the involvement with liver specialists on this particular guideline development.
You know, we actually had the guidelines jointly with the European Association for the Study of Liver Disease, as well as for the European Association for Obesity, many years ago. And a lot has changed. And in between, I would say that the interaction between the hepatologists as well as with the obesity experts, even if they are non-diabetologists, has increased. And of course, EASD is not only teaming up with the hepatologists, but also with cardiologists and other disciplines, because as you say, the complex disease, which we call diabetes, which is a multi-systems disorder. But I have to say that particularly in the field of steatotic liver diseases, we are increasingly working together. And as Frank was saying, a lot has changed over the last years. It's not only the name, which is actually now a, let's say, positive definition of the disease. It's not excluding any other causes. We now have a positive way to design or to define a certain disease. Second, we now have over the last years a number of medications in the field of diabetes, which have certain beneficial effects on fatty liver disease or steatotic liver disease, as we say today. And all of that made it necessary to come up with new guidelines. But even as we speak about it today, we still are looking forward to new drugs, which will be probably soon approved by also the European authorities in the next few months. Mm-hmm. So it's, let's say, a moving target and a rapidly expanding field.
Because the GLP-1s drugs and their effect on the liver was really quite unexpected at the beginning, wasn't it?
Well, yes and no. They are very effective in making you lose weight. And we know
of course that
has an effect. And weight, yes. Weight loss is you know, still the best treatment. And that's why also we have this symposium because the diabetologist is actually a key player in the prevention as well as treatment of liver disease. And it's very important for the diabetologist to be able to identify these patients. And it's also important for the patients to know that the liver can get destroyed, not because of alcohol, but because of, you know, too much food and overweight, etc. Because if we go back 20 years ago, the doctors thought that the patients are just secretly drinking because the whole condition was not recognized. But now we know it's a real condition. It can be defined using defined criteria. But I think awareness still needs to increase amongst diabetologists and the liver needs to enter the list of complications, if you'd like, which you should worry about when you meet a patient with diabetes, especially type 2 diabetes.
Now, we said, or I said earlier, that the session was absolutely packed out. Tell me a bit more about the guidelines and some of the key recommendations.
Well, we recommend that you add a simple blood test, which is very inexpensive. Costs about €5 in Finland, which is an expensive country, to the annual examination of a type 2 diabetic patient, especially those who have the so-called metabolic syndrome, who are abdominally obese, have high lipids and hypertension. Those are the ones which should have this test. And then the guideline recommends that, you know, if the test is okay, then you can take it easy for maybe 3 years and then test again. And then the guideline also tells you when you should act and maybe consult my friend Professor Tucker here, the hepatologist, with your patient.
So tell me about the guidelines from the point of view of the liver specialist. What are the things that you would look out for?
One thing that Hannele emphasized, which is very important, is how can we raise awareness about liver disease among other specialists who deal with people at risk for developing advanced liver disease, and how can we develop easy algorithms and flowcharts that can be implemented in daily practice to actually identify those individuals. And one aspect is managing the cardiometabolic risk factors, recognizing them as risk factors for liver disease as well, doing easy blood tests like the FIB4. And then if you identify a potential risk with an elevated FIB4 score, which is the easy blood-based marker, then you can do a second test that would give more certainty in the diagnosis or in the risk, which is, for instance, the transient elastography that measures the stiffness of the liver. And we know a very scarred tissue where the liver is heavily inflamed and fibrotic would raise this liver stiffness. And then it's time for the hepatologist to really do further workup. Do we need, in addition to the optimized cardiometabolic management in a team of diabetologists, internal medicine, cardiologists, do we need special care for the liver as well? For instance, surveillance for liver cancer. The guidelines also emphasize that if you're in this intermediate range, it's very important to optimize all these risk factors, optimize lifestyle management, and maybe refer to the hepatologist 1 year later if you see that those measures by themselves are not sufficient enough. I think the guideline is very practical and pragmatic in the this point of view, trying to involve as many people who could provide meaningful input in the care of the patients.
Cassandra, we were speaking earlier about how weight loss, of course, is the principal means that GLP-1s have in reducing liver conditions. But is there a factor beyond that? Because we're seeing that with a lot of the cardiovascular thing is not just the weight alone. There seems to be another factor. Is that the same in liver disease?
Yeah, it is. I mean, the liver is the central of metabolism, and almost anything that is favorable for cardiovascular disease is also good for the liver. As an example, the composition of your diet, saturated fat is bad. Also, a lot of simple sugars is bad because they are actually converted to saturated fat. And so your diet plays a role. Then there is exercise, which has also a beneficial effect on the liver, maybe not that great. It has a greater effect on muscle, but also on the liver. So there are multiple factors which you can do even if you don't lose weight. But I would still say the weight loss is the most important.
What do you hope these guidelines will achieve, and how do you see them being implemented?
I think that let me start about one of the important factors of these guidelines, so that we actually came up with a suggested treatment algorithm. So what Hanele was just saying is the first part is, of course, the lifestyle modification and the exercise and the diets. Most of that is based on the impact of weight loss. But you already mentioned before, is there something else? Mm-hmm. And actually, we already mentioned the new drug, which is still not approved in Europe. It's already approved in the United States. And we expect approval during the next months, next year, probably also in Europe. And this is a drug principle which acts on the thyroid hormone receptor in the liver and is effective in reducing liver fat and improving fibrosis. So the complication of the fatty liver disease. And interestingly, this drug doesn't affect glycemia. It doesn't change glucose control and it doesn't change body weight, even if it acts on the thyroid hormone.
So it's very liver specific.
So this is something which is liver specific, and you make the right point that we actually try to sort out liver specific from general or obesity, diabetes related treatment concepts. And this is what we actually would like to focus here, even if we have not a specific liver-specific approved treatment at the moment, which we will have probably in the future, because there's a lot of tests and trials ongoing, testing the different GLP-1 receptor agonists and co-agonists. So there will be much more in the future. But for the moment, we would like to focus on what is available, how do we treat the comorbidities, and is there a specific liver-directed treatment which we can in the future use in our people?
I think this is wonderful to have the first drug approved, at least in the U.S. On the other hand, I would be a little bit skeptical of how well, you know, this can be reimbursed, because it's going to be very expensive. To me, and you know, but I mean, this is still good news. But I think the most important, to me, the most important part here is that these patients who are progressing and who are continuously gaining weight, that they can be picked out. Those can be picked out who have really an increase in this, for example, the FIB4 marker and in this transient elastography test. And then that gives the diabetologist a very good reason to try to be particularly aggressive, because weight loss is, of course, always part of type 2 diabetes treatment and diet and exercise. But here, this is a special indication because it actually can prevent you from developing this serious liver disease and prevent you from sending the patient to Professor Tuck's clinic.
So this is a very helpful, practical document, an algorithm that people can follow. And it also seems to me from the outside, it follows down the road of personalization. It's picking out, as you say, Hanala, people who are at particular risk in order that they can be seen and by liver specialists. What would you like to add?
Maybe that the guidelines also address issues that appear a bit more specific. So how do you deal with diabetes drugs if you are cirrhotic? If you do have a liver cirrhosis already, which of the drugs are saved? And we really benefited a lot from the interactions with the experts reviewing the data. So a lot of the beneficial drugs actually are safe in case of compensated cirrhosis, for instance, metformin or SGLT2 inhibitors or GLP-1 receptor agonists. It also deals with the aspect, how do you then monitor those patients for disease progressions from a liver perspective? And what are the weight loss goals if you are maybe obese but have sarcopenia due to liver cirrhosis? So a lot of this includes recommendations for adaptations of the algorithms in case you observe disease progression. And I think that is something very valuable because those individuals with liver cirrhosis will not be managed by the hepatologist alone. They will be also managed by their diabetologist, internal medicine specialist. And it's important that we agree on common ground, which drugs are saved, what is the right goal and the right target, even in those cases that advanced.
So great work by you all. And where can people find the guidelines?
Well, it's simultaneously published by all three societies, EASL, EASD, EASO, and you can find it, for instance, the full version in the Journal of Hepatology. It's online, it's free to be downloaded, it's published in the September issue. There's an executive summary in Diabetologia in the journal, but the full version at the EASD website, and EASO published it in Obesity Facts, so many ways to find it. They look a bit different due to the layout of the different societies, but the content is exactly the same.
The content is all magnificent. It's a fantastic team effort. Congratulations. We'll be back with you soon.
Thank you for joining us on the podcast of the European Association for the Study of Diabetes. We hope you enjoyed today's insights. If you did, go ahead and hit subscribe and you'll always stay up to date with the latest in diabetes research and discoveries. And if you'd like to dive deeper, you can find plenty more information at EASD.org.